Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
Conservation programs like WRE, Wetland Reserve Easement, they add to the safety net.
Chris McLeland is with Ducks Unlimited, a livestock producer from Missouri.
You don't know, in my home state of Missouri, we see flooding somewhat frequently, and so the opportunity to have a program like WRE that can do a wetland restoration project and be available as an option to a producer, is part of risk management. It can be a solution there in terms of taking a loss on those acres, 3 out of 5 years, so it's really important, and it's decisions that we see get made, and we're thankful to have options for producers like that.
Ag News Now, Agriculture Today.
Tensions have been rising in the Middle East after Iran threatened to close the Strait of Hormuz following U.S. strikes on its nuclear facilities. Narrow passageway crucial to global oil movement, with 20 million barrels passing through daily. Analysts say higher oil prices could hit shippers first and ripple through the supply chain. Diesel prices have been climbing, up 14 cents over the past month. Instability could also increase interest in ethanol blends, which tend to be a bit more price stable. Fuel situation comes as EPA is releasing higher than expected ethanol blending requirements. Farm groups sounding the alarm as a key tariff deadline approaches in just over 2 weeks. Return to tougher reciprocal tariffs could worsen conditions for U.S. producers already under strain. One trade advocate warns the ag sector being hit on both ends, from export challenges to rising input cost, and says the financial and emotional toll is mounting. Farmers being urged to contact lawmakers ahead of that decision. USDA data shows U.S. on track for the largest ag trade deficit in history. From January through April, ag imports outpaced exports by $19.7 billion. It's the widest gap ever for that period. If trends continue, fiscal year 2025 shortfall could reach $49.5 billion. Shift marks a stark contrast from past decades of consistent trade surpluses and highlights the long-term changes in global demand and U.S. competitiveness. EPA and the Army Corps of Engineers concluding their public hearings on the Waters of the U.S. rule, that's WOTUS, with plans to finalize a new version by the end of the year. Ag groups voicing strong support for clearer definitions, while environmental advocates continue to push to preserve the current rule. Legal challenges over the past 20 years have created a patchwork of definitions across the country, frustrating both regulators and producers. 9 listening sessions held across the country, including in West Virginia and Utah. And the USDA latest forecast shows protein prices rising across the board, steer prices hitting a record high of $221.51 per hundredweight for 2025, with further increases expected into 2026. Hog, poultry, and turkey prices continue to climb, driven in part by strong beef demand and tight supplies. Experts caution that sustained price growth may begin to strain consumers if the trends continue. And there have been complaints from feeders in the South after 1,000 head traded in Texas cash cattle at 228. The Ag Center suggests they likely were low quality, and then it set the base price for 200,000 head to be sold on formula or grid, or aka over the top, which is not reported to USDA. It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
My name is Russell Boehning. I'm a fourth-generation farmer and president of the Texas Farm Bureau.
Boehning testifying before House Ag Subcommittee on Conservation.
Along with my brother, we produce grain, cotton, and wheat while operating a 450-cow dairy and a beef operation outside of Polk, Texas, which is right southeast of San Antonio. It's an honor to be here on behalf of our member families of the Texas Farm Bureau. Voluntary conservation practices have become a cornerstone of modern agriculture. Our family implements conservation practices to improve water quality, soil health, and wildlife habitat while keeping our land productive. But we are not unique. Farmers across Texas and across this whole country are seizing the opportunity to utilize conservation programs. For decades, USDA, NRCS, and FSA programs have assisted farmers in executing on-farm conservation practices. Farmers rely on working lands programs such as EQIP, CSP, and RCPP. These programs are highly successful, and the greatest challenge for producers is just gaining entry. All of these programs have become increasingly oversubscribed, with demand consistently surpassing available funding. For Texans, EQIP is of the utmost importance given the 50% set aside for livestock operations. In 2022, the Inflation Reduction Act allocated additional funding for these working lands programs. Currently, this IRA funding is temporary and does not alter the permanent baseline funding established by the 2018 Farm Bill. The One Big Beautiful Bill Act that's passed the House last month infuses roughly $11 billion in unspent IRA funding into this baseline for these programs, while also adding $8 billion in additional baseline funding. Incorporating the IRA funds into the baseline would ensure that these funds continue in perpetuity and farmers can stay committed to their conservation work. CRP is a voluntary land retirement program that assists farmers in removing environmentally sensitive land from ag production. For many farmers, CRP serves as an important farm safety net by providing a reliable source of income during times when crop prices are low or when certain acres are less productive due to environmental challenges. By enrolling vulnerable or less profitable land in CRP, farmers can receive a guaranteed annual rental that helps stabilize their cash flow, thereby reducing financial stress and risk. We support the approach taken in the committee's bill that proposes using soil classification to determine CRP payments. This approach could better align rental rates with the productivity and environmental value of the land enrolled. By factoring in soil classification, payments could be more accurately tailored to reflect the potential ag value and conservation benefits of specific parcels. It would create a payment scale that incentivizes the enrollment of environmentally sensitive areas, which focuses on the parcels of land that the program was originally designed to protect. Farmers often express concern about the shortage of technical service providers available to assist with these conservation practices, as this lack of support can delay or limit their ability to implement these programs. Without sufficient TSPs, producers may struggle to develop conservation plans, complete necessary documentation, or receive expert guidance on selecting the effective practices tailored for their land. This shortage can be especially challenging in rural or underserved areas where access to trained professionals is already limited. Expanding and better supporting the network of TSPs is essential to ensure farmers can successfully navigate conservation programs and achieve meaningful environmental outcomes. Congress must invest in the TSPs that assist farmers in executing these practices. We strongly advocate that the committee work to make all conservation programs more practical, accessible, and supportive of modern agriculture challenges.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
In my real life, I am a rice grower in the Sacramento Valley.
California representative and member of the House Ag Subcommittee on Conservation, Doug LaMalfa.
My farm and many of my neighbors who utilized the EQIP program in the past have done at least a certain amount of effort to provide the habitats to all the many species we have in the flyway and so plentiful in the Sacramento Valley. In the 2018 Farm Bill, there was a provision included that allowed the Secretary to enter into EQIP contracts for up to 10 years for practices solely for the benefit of wildlife, including post-harvest flooding. It would help maintain seasonal wetlands for the waterfowl and migratory bird habitat. So, to my knowledge, USDA has still not carried out any contracts for longer than a few years, a couple years at a time. So I'm curious when with the provision that we worked on in 2018, why have not then been more longer, you know, up to these 10-year contracts that Bill provided for, as you know, depending to what level you're participating, infrastructure, the effort you might do in shaping your lands, shaping irrigation systems, and other aspects of what you would do to enhance waterfowl and conservation, does require a certain amount of effort, certain amount of investment in doing that. So for Mr. McLeland, what's your familiarity with EQIP putting out actual 10-year contracts? Again, because if I was going to invest, then I would want to be able to know that I'm going to get a return, that the money I spend, the effort I make, is going to be more for than just a couple years, and maybe I don't get to be in that contract after that, and you know, you're out that effort, which I think most people that participate at all would probably wouldn't mind being in it for a longer period of time. It's not a hard thing. It's not like, say, in some cases, permanent easements, which shy a lot of people away. So what do you think about that?
Yeah, thank you for the question. It's certainly good to have that option, for sure. And you know, each contract, each interaction with that producer, it's very tailored to their operation. So we work with them and are very sensitive to that. We haven't seen as many 10-year contracts as we probably would have expected. Generally, average around 5.
You have seen some 10-year, though?
I have seen some, yes. And but there,
what state or what region they would be in that you're seeing that happen?
Arkansas.
Arkansas.
Yeah, and we have definitely seen 5 years be the norm. The one to five, and that generally ends up being a function of the operation and the preference of the landowner.
So, do you hear a clamoring by growers for the 10-year contracts, or is it really a low demand situation? What do you think?
It has seemed like to be a more low demand situation.
Because we have run into anecdotes, at least on that, where we're wondering why NRCS is not allowing them or processing them or what have you, as defined in the 2018 Farm Bill, to give that additional flexibility and long term, you know, depending to what level, to what stage you're practicing. You know, I'd want to know if I'm making significant changes in my operation, that if it worked for me or a neighbor or whatever, that you would have that option. But I guess we need to get a little more direct input from folks that have sought these 10 years. Anything else on you would have?
Again, we would advocate for as long a long con. We would like to see as long a contract as we can get. So 10 years is good, but definitely need to take some look at the implementation side of it.
Well, it is very important we tailor these to
yes.
individual needs, as you mentioned
yes.
at the top there.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
I call this meeting of the Appropriations Committee to order. Welcome, everyone. Today's markup is the resumption of our markup for fiscal year 2026 of the Agriculture, Rural Development, Food and Drug Administration-related agencies appropriations measure, which has been in recess.
Oklahoma Representative Tom Cole is chairman of the Appropriations Committee, trying to finalize 2 weeks of work.
While we've already considered many amendments to this measure, we have many more to go. Nonetheless, it's my intention that we will finish our work on this bill tonight. So keep that in mind.
My amendment is on the WIC single purchasing contract system. And if you look back at the history of this bill, what you'll see is that the committee was concerned with the rising cost of I chose you because you're tall. With the rising per month cost of monthly expenditures on food costs under WIC, and what you will see if you don't support this amendment for any other reason than support it, because you'll see it did not fix the problem it purported to fix. It continued to rise through the 80s, through the 70s.
Thank the gentlelady. The gentleman from Maryland, Dr. Harris, is recognized to address the amendment.
Thank you very much. I want to thank the gentlelady from Washington State to bring this to the attention of this committee, and then ultimately, hopefully, to the body. Look, it's very interesting what happens with infant formula. You know, when I used to work in the on the labor and delivery floors, the manufacturers like give you the samples like to mothers. First of all, discouraging breastfeeding, and second of all, like that's their sales pitch. And you know, a lot of those mothers, that's the brand they would end up with, regardless of what's in it. And there are differences between different formulas. So actually, if you have consolidation of the system, what you're doing is you're saying that we're taking away the ability of a young mother, because they're on the WIC program, to say, wait a minute, I think this formula might be better than that formula. And especially, and I've spoken to the FDA commissioner about this, is actually looking at broadening the number of formulas that are actually improved. Youngest daughter, who's a nurse, when she had her children, she looked at these formulas and she said, oh, those European formulas, very different formula, very, very different ingredients. And acknowledged to be probably better than what we have here, but of course not available here. Now, this is something that shouldn't exist. I mean, we really should have and I've talked to Mr. Kennedy about it as well, Secretary Kennedy. They want to look at this subject. I think this is a good first step. This is the first step that says, look, within the WIC program, there is no reason why you have to have single source in a state. I mean, a state like Wyoming, a state like New York, both single source. Now, come on. I mean, or California. They could easily have multiple sources. And with the competitors bidding for the multiple sources, it makes a lot of sense. So I urge the committee to support the amendment.
So I got a very innocent question from somebody who probably was wondering, how long am I going to have to work tonight? And they said, when do you think we'll finish the ag markup? And I'm really proud to tell you I was off by about an hour and 45 minutes. And you all deserve the credit for that. So thank you for your civility. Thank you for your professionalism. Thank you for staying within the clock. And thank you for moving along quickly. I appreciate it more than I can say. So, seeing no further amendments, I now recognize Mr. Rogers for a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move to favorably report to the House the fiscal year 2026 Agriculture, Rural Development, Food and Drug Administration, and related agencies appropriations bill.
On this vote, the ayes are 35, the noes are 27. The motion is agreed to.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
I'm Dan Siebert. I'm a charter member of the National Watershed Coalition. I also served the coalition as executive director for over 20 years.
Siebert testifying recently before a House Ag Subcommittee on Conservation.
To begin, I want you to understand that the watershed program touches me on a personal level. I was raised on the banks of the Washita River, one of the original 11 upstream flood protection demonstration watersheds. I also witnessed the incremental improvements as one watershed dam after another was completed on those tributaries and creeks. Not huge, massive dams on the river. It was the smaller structures dotting the landscape, integrated into private farms and ranches that shaped my views and my passion for a lifetime of service and conservation. While USDA may be better known for providing a financial safety net for farmers and ranchers, the department also provides an actual safety net for rural communities. The watershed and flood prevention program is vital, but often overlooked infrastructure program in the NRCS portfolio. I consider Chairman Lucas as the godfather of the program, an heir to the legacy of watershed leadership shaped by his family and community stalwarts in rural western Oklahoma. The reason behind this is simple. Of the nearly 12,000 watershed structures nationwide, over 2,000 of them are in the state of Oklahoma. As a matter of fact, 71% of those nearly 12,000 dams are in the states represented here by this subcommittee's members. The Watershed Protection and Flood Prevention Act authorizes NRCS to work with local sponsors to install watershed improvement projects. Projects provide flood prevention, water quality and quantity protection, agricultural water management, municipal water supply management, and wildlife habitat protection. The program has gained even more importance as a tool for helping farms, ranches, and rural communities adapt to increasing weather volatility and reducing risk against catastrophic weather events. The annual benefits these projects produce is over $2 billion. There are watershed project structures in 218 congressional districts across the nation. As a result, more than 48 million people across the United States benefit from the watershed program every year. A crucial part of the watershed program is the dam rehabilitation program. Many dams today are in a far different setting than when constructed. In addition, many of these structures built by NRCS had a design life of only 50 years. Since most of this construction occurred from the 1940s to the early 70s, many of these dams are now past their design life and they show the effects of aging. Mr. Lucas led the development of rehabilitation legislation in 2000 that ensured the nation's investment in the watershed program had the opportunity to continue into the future. Under this program, dams are selected for rehabilitation through analysis and a rigorous assessment process. I cannot overemphasize the importance of Congress and the USDA as full partners in the watershed program. We do think there are improvements to be made to the program. Our farm bill priorities are quite simple. Increase funding to the program, increase the flexibility of the program's authority to make repairs that go beyond routine operation and maintenance, which is required of the local sponsors, but fall short of the threshold for full rehabilitation. Provide flexibility in cost share to states. Reduce the regulatory and administrative barriers that add years to project implementation, and add statutory language to provide oversight and accountability for program funds. The National Watershed Coalition is pleased to see its recommendations integrated into the Farm, Food, and National Security Act of 2024. We cannot thank Chairman Thompson and Subcommittee Chair Lucas enough for their support of these policies, and we look forward to working with them and the other members to continue this work into the next Farm Bill.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Today we'll be examining Farm Bill conservation programs and hearing from a distinguished panel of witnesses from their perspectives.
Former chairman of the House Ag Committee, now chair of the House Ag Subcommittee on Conservation, Oklahoma's Frank Lucas.
Title II of the Farm Bill authorizes a suite of conservation programs that are critical for supporting the long-term viability of farmers, ranchers, and rural communities. These programs have the dual benefit of supporting the producer and addressing pressing natural resource concerns at the local level. As we have today's discussion, hear about the programs, and discuss potential improvements, it's important that we have some context for why and how our system of farm conservation developed over many years.
Dr. Jim Baird is a former Purdue University ag professor representing Indiana.
You know, I think it's very appropriate that you mentioned the Dust Bowl and the Soil Conservation Service in your remarks, because it's relevant to what we're talking about in this committee. And I wanted to share with you, when I was a young kid on the farm in Indiana, we had one of the worst floods that I had ever seen, and it took out railroad trestles and filled an example of a 5-gallon bucket of water in a very short period. We even had, back then, we fed hogs on platforms, wooden platforms, and put feeders on them. We saw pigs going down that flooded stream still on the platform, and there wasn't anything you could do about it. But my point is, the local farmers got together with the Soil Conservation Service and implemented the small watershed projects. And so when I get around to it, Dr. Siebert, I'm going to start with you, but the question goes to all of you. But those small watershed projects that went up the tributaries rather than a big main dam on a main stream and went up the tributaries, and those small dams functioned like the water tank on a toilet, in my opinion, and let it out slow. And we haven't had a flood in that area since that. I'm sorry, sir, but anyway. But we haven't had a flood in that stream since then. The only thing I see happening is that they've come to the end of their useful life, and there's some thought about maybe taking those out. My suggestion would be that we restore them and replenish them. But going on to my question, science, technology, and innovation, they're really central to the progression of American agriculture and have led the U.S. agricultural industry being the most reliable and efficient in the world. So how can we be sure to maintain clear eligibility requirements for these conservation programs that we're talking about, paving the way for implementation of new technologies when they come about, like precision agriculture and technologies or new land management practices? So then I'm going to go back, Dr. Siebert, if you would like to comment on my original thoughts, and then the rest of you on this precision agriculture, that would be appreciated.
To thank you across the country and let you tell that story. There are, in fact, 132 NRCS structures in your state at this point in time. I agree with you that in the majority of the cases, it's not take them out. It's rehabilitate them and continue to provide those benefits. Highway culverts, county road culverts, bridges, school bus routes have all grown accustomed to the protection those structures provide. And to take them out, in my opinion, would be an error, and folks would learn fairly quickly with the volatile weather we see around the country that something was doing a good job, even though it was a silent sentinel. Somebody didn't know it was there. They didn't know what the function of it was. It was providing the protection necessary to keep commerce going in that county and keep kids safe going to school.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Milk production we raised for both 2025 and 2026.
USDA World Agricultural Outlook Board Chair Mark Jekinowski explains the whys in the June milk outlook.
For 2025, this is mainly just keying off the latest milk production report, and that's driven by higher cow inventories. And then into 2026, we're expecting to see some increase in milk per cow as well, supporting that production increase.
Consumer demand remains strong for butter, domestically via imports, internationally via exports.
Dairy demand remains strong, and that is reflected in price strength across all of the major dairy products,
culminating in month-over-month increases in the all-milk price forecast for both years. Despite that, the year-over-year all-milk price remains 65 cents lower, forecasted at $21.30 a hundredweight in 2026. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.